Hey folks, Jeff here. Welcome to a special episode of The Left Show. In these midweek supplementals, I'm trying to interview as many candidates as I can before the 2026 election. In this series, I'm attempting to talk to as many of the Democratic candidates in Utah as I can who are running for Utah's newly redrawn Congressional District 1. I've sent invitations to as many candidates as I can to join me in what should be the friendliest interview they've ever had. Who are they? What do they stand for? Are they centrist corporate Democrats or left-leaning progressives with a vision to improve the lives of the American people? On a larger scale, I'm also sending invites to candidates all across the country. I want to talk to as many folks as I can who want to change things for the better, who believe in a larger tent, and believe that the American people are more important than the corporate donor class. I hope you enjoy these conversations, learn a thing or two about the people running to represent you, and I appreciate your attention to this matter.
Pick a window.
The Left Show is not intended for youngsters. It's not intended for the sensitive. It's certainly not intended for right-wingers. Use your own discretion. Awful swearing.
You know who the best-looking person sitting up there was? Who was it with the cowboy hat?
No, J.M. Bell.
J.M. Bell. Mm-hmm. I don't know who that is.
He hosts a podcast.
Well, he was good-looking.
You pompous, stuck-up, snot-nosed, giant, twerp, scumbag, fuck-faced, dickhead, asshole!
Gentlemen, this is Democracy Manifest.
For what reason? What is the charge? Eating a meal? A succulent Chinese meal?
You're listening to the world's greatest political podcast, The Left Show. This is another in our series of supplementals where I do my best to interview each and every one of the candidates running for Utah's Congressional District 1. That is the new seat that the cheating Republicans lost their hands on and the judge made them take it. I'm interested in the candidates, and so here we go. I would like to introduce my new best friend, Liban Muhammad. Who is running for? I got your name right. I'm so happy about myself. who's running for this seat against a very crowded field? And so, why don't you up top go ahead? Tell me a little bit about yourself. Tell the folks who you are and kind of a general outline of where you stand, and then we'll dig into some specifics to finish off.
Yeah, like you said, Jeff, this is such a beautiful opportunity for our community for the first time. We're going to be able to have representation that really reflects the values that we have, the issues that we want to be pushing forward and advocating for. What was once a plus 20 Republican district is now a plus 24 percentage points Democrat. And bigger than that, it's one of the most progressive districts in the entire nation when it comes to its Democratic voting base.
Yep.
So a lot of people around the nation, they definitely discount, think Utah is just a red state. But this district is not only blue, but it's something beyond that, something really special for the working class. So a little bit about myself. As Jeff mentioned, my name is Liban Muhammad. I'm running in Congressional District 1, and I'm running fundamentally on a platform that focuses on diplomacy abroad and dignity at home. What that means is fighting for the working class and making sure that we are allocating our resources in a way that's sound to empower them, whether that's single-payer healthcare that costs less money overall, but it would allow us to cover every single person with health coverage. There's 300,000 people in Utah that don't have coverage, 27 million adults in the nation, 4 million children. If there's a system that we can go with that allows us to solve this and save money at the same time with better care, to me, it's a no-brainer. Another thing that I really want to focus on is big tech accountability. So I used to work as a government relations director for American Heart Association. But after that, I worked at Meta, and then I went to TikTok. And honestly, when I was working at TikTok, I was in DC. I was a congressional investigations lead out there while they're going through all that banned stuff for 3 years. Mm-hmm. I was quite passionate about the work we were doing. I thought the efforts to silence what frankly was a pro-Palestinian movement, and a lot of progressive causes was the real motive behind these ban efforts.
Yeah.
And fighting it day in and day out on the front lines, answering the hard questions, that was great work. But upon the acquisition of the platform and the consolidation of media and now social media and part of that, it's such few hands. And Larry Ellison, I thought it was something that it didn't sit right with my integrity. So I resigned in protest, and now I came back home to the community I was born and raised in. And I just want to do the good fight the good fight, you know, involve new communities that typically don't get involved in the process. We had over 50 refugees win delegate seats, coached them up, recruited them to the process, taught them how to engage. And it's been a really beautiful experience so far. And hopefully we can continue that trajectory and make something special happen come June and be that Democratic nominee.
That sounds fantastic. That's a very good answer. Tech accountability. I'm trying to remember. I've flipped through everybody's website in the last few days, and I think yours is the only one that mentions that. Mm-hmm. Now, let me, for just a minute, put on my, I used to run campaigns hat, and I still do advertising for a living, but dude, well done, website. Good logo. Oh, the branding is choice. What a good looking put together thing.
I'm sending this to the designers for sure after this. They're special. Our video team is awesome too.
Everything looks slick. It's good. It's easy to navigate. Any question I had is right there. I love it. And that is something I do not say. Usually I complain a lot about, especially lawn signs. Boy, Democrats make some ugly, ugly lawn signs. But I do. No, I did. I really wanted to take a second. And if you guys haven't been here, it's libanforcongress.com, L-I-B-A-N for Congress. That's the letter, or the word for, not the letter, because this is a serious gentleman. Not one of those silly ones that puts a number in their name. I have pet peeves. What am I going to do?
I love Jeff Albright. I love you, Matt. This is going to be great.
Well, good. I hope you have a good time. So I have a set of five questions that I want to ask to just kind of help figure out where you're at and where you're coming from. The first one of those is, and it's dealing with the Democratic Party. Now, I have this, calm, rational opinion that we have been failed by party leadership, whether that be at the DNC for running off David Hogg, who I really think was going to be instrumental in both Senate and House races this year. And then, you know, there's Jeffries, who's driving me nuts with his just lack of movement, Schumer as well. You know, I am an old guy that believes that the party should reflect those people that are your age and coming up and younger. I think that we should be, you know, building a world for anybody born today to live in with clean air, clean water, no war in Iran, etc. So the first question I have is where would you be willing to break with party leadership in order to get things done as you've outlined in your platform?
Quite frankly, a lot of my platform is a position that's the opposite of the typical establishment.
You think?
Especially the DC establishment. I think Democratic Party in Utah is a little bit different, right? A lot of us are very progressive. But in DC, number one, like I mentioned, single payer healthcare. There's a reason why it's not getting done. It sounds like a no-brainer. Cost less money, better care for everyone. And it's a proof point in other nations, in Europe, for example. But the reason it doesn't happen is because there's unlimited spending in politics because of those three core precedents. Citizens United, Buckley, Speech Now. And these three precedents have opened up the floodgates for private insurance industry to be able to spend unlimited funds in our elections. Now, in this race, Democratic race, for example, there's only one candidate who opposes single-payer healthcare. All the other candidates have beautiful positions on it. And there's also only one candidate that is receiving private insurance money.
Mm-hmm.
And that is exactly what the root of the problem is with the establishment. So whether it be healthcare policy and guaranteeing it as a human right through a single-payer system, whether it be my position on what's happening in Gaza, I do believe it's a genocide. I do believe, I know it's a genocide, according to all the authoritative resources that one could find. I've seen a lot of people from my own community who are from Palestine, who actually, when I was sitting down with them in real time, I had an individual get a call that they lost their childhood home and they lost a number of family members in Gaza. And it was right there when they found out.
Yikes.
And to me, it's more than just, you know, something that you see on social media, something you see on the news. It's something that I'm seeing in our own community members' lives and how it's impacting them, because we do have a pretty large Palestinian community out here. So that's a big issue that I will go off with. Getting big money out of politics, like I mentioned, backing up unions, pro-acts, a lot of things. Yeah, a lot of things. Immigration, abolish ICE. Yeah.
Well, I'm enjoying your answer so far.
I'm a leftist. I wish the Democratic Party and, you know, the big institutions out there were more supportive of a lot of these policies, but unfortunately they're not. But something that people don't talk about a lot with the Democratic Party and the idea of parties in general is, at the end of the day, it's just a party. And just because you're a part of that party doesn't mean that you have to follow suit with every single thing. At the end of the day,
it's important to be your own self.
Is the voters and your conscience, and you vote accordingly. And the party to me is nothing more than a letter that's just on that piece of paper on the ballot.
I couldn't agree more. All right. Question number two.
Let's do it.
So you're elected. You're back in D.C. You've got your committee assignments. You know who you are, what you stand for, where you're headed, and what time lunch is. So what policy of your platform are you the most willing to spend your political capital on? What is, if you had to pick just one policy, whether it's Medicare for All, Green New Deal, student debt consolidation, which one of all of them do you think you would put as number one on the list?
For me, a single-payer healthcare, because I think it has the most tangible impact on people's lives. But I'm going to give you a second one, even though you asked for just one.
No, you're fine. You can do two.
Which is a national privacy law, because it's something that's that is viable to pass. We are the only wealthy nation on earth and developed like nation on earth that does not have a truly comprehensive national privacy law, such as GDPR in the EU.
Mm-hmm.
Both parties want to see this happen. There's just hiccups here and there with exactly how it should happen. And I think I can bring my expertise to the table there and find that happy medium to get a deal done and make sure that ordinary folks like us, American citizens, have our data protected, have our data owned by us.
Yeah.
And don't let me open up the basketball box.
No, I dig it. I do. It's... national privacy law. Like I said, I'm older than pretty much the majority of the field running for this office. So I was around and fighting the Blue Dog Democrats back in the day, and in the Patriot Act that we're still dealing with, you know, fallout from that garbage legislation. So. Yeah, I like that, and I haven't heard anybody else talk about it, which I think should be a little startling. But, you know, I do a show every week, and I haven't talked about privacy in months. So, you know, hey, that's good. You're bringing it out there, and you're talking about stuff that other people aren't talking about, and I find that refreshing. I like being caught off guard by things that I have overlooked. I used to call it fatigue. You know, it's like I care about so many things. Sooner or later, I'm going to get tired and forget a few of them. So, I like that. That was very good. That was a very good answer. But yeah, single-payer healthcare that's very close to my heart. It's not my number one, but it used to be. I come from a time where we had a thing that Trump is trying to bring back called the pre-existing condition discrimination. So if you switch jobs and jump to a new insurance, I'm a diabetic, they would be like, well, we don't have to cover your diabetes because you had that before you were on our insurance. We don't have to cover your busted knee. We don't have to cover your migraines. Anything that you've seen a doctor for before today, we don't have to cover. And it was, Obamacare was to a lot of us at the time, while groundbreaking legislation, it was very disappointing because we all wanted single payer as well. But the pre-existing condition discrimination, making that against the law, did more for me and my family than just about any other part of that law. So, you know, I do agree with you on that, that we definitely need to switch to universal health care. It's not that hard. Mexico just did it in like 10 minutes, you know?
I mean,
and they're not as rich as we are. We've got plenty of money for it.
Here's the thing is, I feel like the issue on the left is how we communicate our policies at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I use the term healthcare as a human right because it's a human right, right?
Yeah.
And I even have to check myself sometimes. You know what? Maybe, Liban, maybe you shouldn't use those words because people who are centrist and on the right, they think of it as a handout. But it's not a handout. It's just so like people don't think about, of course, we're not going to pay for the road over there, right? Of course, we're not going to pay for K through 12. That's what it should be like. And we are paying for it at the end of the day through our taxes. It's not a handout. We're paying for it. And if we do it, we're going to pay less. And what I really want people to understand is if I can hone in on it's mathematically sound, it costs less money, and it allows us to cover everybody, instead of the ethics of healthcare, which are obvious.
Yeah.
I think that resonates more with folks because people think it's far-fetched. Everybody thinks obviously it would be amazing to have universal coverage. I don't think anybody would think that's a bad idea, but people think that the resources aren't there. But what they forget is they are already paying a tax, but they're paying a double tax is how I like to describe it.
Yes.
You're gonna pay your ordinary tax and it goes towards Medicare and Medicaid and all these other public programs. But most Americans are also paying a second tax, but it's to private insurers in the form of premiums, deductibles, co-pays, and all these out-of-pocket costs. And then ultimately their profits and their shareholders. And we can cut out that useless middleman. They're just blood-sucking profiteers that aren't actually providing net value to the system, right? It's your healthcare providers, the healthcare systems that you care about their quality and all of that. And they're going to be privatized.
Yeah.
But simply cutting the check, if the government does it, we don't have to pay in profit. If the government does it, we can negotiate at a national level.
Mm-hmm.
As a single payer. If the government does it, you know, almost 30% of healthcare costs are administrative fees, wasteful. In-network, out-of-network doesn't exist. There's only one network, United States of America. We move those administrative wasteful costs from 2 to 5%. It's just sensible. Overall, many studies say they could cost us up to $400 billion less. And the counter argument is, oh, well, we're going to stress the healthcare system. There's going to be so many people that are coming. Yes, but that's not because this is a bad program. It's because people who couldn't afford it and wouldn't go to the hospital now feel like they can.
Yeah.
So the issue is we simply don't have a system that can handle the demand. And guess what we can do now? We have $400 billion to invest into the system so we can pay for doctors to go for people who want to become doctors in their education programs and build more hospitals in rural locations and do all the things that we need to make a system that can actually handle the demand our society needs to be fulfilled.
Hey folks, Jeff here. None of the podcasts on Defenestrate Media were created by a big company or a moneyed network. There's no corporate backing here. The shows, The Left Show, the world's greatest comic book podcast, and I Told You So, exist because we thought that it would be fun to sit down with microphones and talk about the shit that we care about. Politics, comics, culture. Over time, something pretty amazing happened. And a community has formed around these shows. Listeners who come back every week, people who argue with us, laugh with us, send us messages, and share the episodes with friends. Recently, we got a couple of shout-outs by some bigger shows, which has reinvigorated interest in what we do here. It means that there's a lot more ears paying attention to the words that we throw out. It's a lot of growth. But growth means that what we've done is sort of hit the limit of what we can do with both the gear we have, the software we use, and the hosting that we've been running now for years. So we're asking for help. We're raising funds to upgrade our podcast hosting. We need a lot more bandwidth. We need 2 new hard drives for both production and storage. And then we have 3 pieces of software that we use that cost a bloody fortune annually to build the shows. We've always been listener supported. That's how independent podcasts like this survive. So if the shows have ever made you laugh, made you think, or just kept you company while you were driving somewhere, maybe consider pitching in this round. A few dollars helps when there's a lot of listeners that are a part of it. Look, do us a favor. Navigate yourself over to thelefshow.com, click on that big banner for the spring fundraiser. And we're not just asking for help, we're offering prizes for people that do help. So take a look right there at the bottom of the page. You'll see everything that we're offering for those that come to our rescue. With that in mind, thank you, seriously, for helping to keep independent media alive. What if there was one place where comic book fans could get everything? News, reviews, debates, and deep dives every single week.
And not just we read one issue and Googled the rest kind of takes. We're talking 15 years deep, over 600 episodes.
That's right. The world's greatest comic book podcast has been breaking down Marvel, DC, indie books, movies, and fandom culture long before it was cool.
Whether you're a lifelong collector,
a casual fan who just saw the latest superhero movie,
or someone trying to figure out where to even start,
we have got you covered.
And we don't always agree, which makes it way more fun.
Yeah, way more fun.
New episodes every Tuesday.
Real opinions, real conversations.
Zero gatekeeping.
Check out the world's greatest comic book podcast at thecomicbookpodcast.com.
Hey kids, comics!
Brilliant. I mean, that really does, it rolls down to and dovetails quite well with economic justice, you know. 100%. So when we talk about economic justice, what like specific policies do you feel like you'd fight for that basically, in my opinion, directly shift power or wealth and not just regulate it?
Great question.
Yeah.
Number one, I want to create an infrastructure for the best ideas to prevail. And the way we do that is by empowering unions, the PRO Act. Make sure that collective bargaining is something that can happen in the way that it needs to, and that it's encouraged, and that it gets the resources that it needs. Because, for example, let's pick education. I may have grown up and gone to school and have been a student, but I don't know as much as the teachers know, I'll tell you that.
Sure.
And what I for sure don't know is as much as the collective intelligence of all the teachers. And they're going to come up with the most brilliant ideas ever about how our students need to be taught, about how compensation structures should be, and making sure that they're being taken care of, and all these different things. So I want to make sure that we're empowering unions so that way we can adequately negotiate for labor. The next thing I want to do is I want to increase the minimum wage to $20, to $20 to $25. I'm open to both proposals. Prefer obviously $25.
Sure, sure.
So do I. Minimum wage is just that. It's a floor, it's a minimum. But the fundamental issue is wages. And the wage gap is forever increasing. So how do we solve that? There's proposals from Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren that I love. And it's this concept of an executive to worker pay ratio. So you come up with a ratio, let's say, for example, we could pick any kind of ratio, that's another debate, it could be itself, but let's say it's 2000x, very generous. But if you're a CEO of a Fortune 100 company and you're making more than 2000x the median employee, then that's not allowed. And if you want to increase your pay, Well, now you have to also increase their pay. And so that way, there's an incentive structure for the people who are exploiting us currently. If they want to make more, if they want to do better, they have to make sure their employees are doing better instead of just using that capital to pay themselves and then just do stock buybacks.
I like it.
And inflate their own value. I could go on and on. But that's my fundamental thoughts.
No. I dig it. I do. Okay. So this is the one that hits me personally. Where are you at on LGBTQ rights, especially transgender rights, and what I consider to be the barbaric behavior of legislatures and the federal government over the last few years?
Yes. First, I'll tell you my two policies, and then I'm going to tell you my thoughts on the human sentiment. Policy-wise, two things. Equality Act, that makes sure that the Civil Rights Act gets expanded to include sex and gender and all these different things that would rope in their communities and make sure that they have exactly what it sounds like, equality, equity, and people are not being discriminated against. The next thing, Medicare for all, single payer healthcare system. If we can provide full coverage for everyone while lowering overall costs, that's exceptional. And that would include gender affirming care. That would include any kind of care. So I think these two policies would A, address discrimination, and B, address the accessibility that these communities need. The next thing is, quite frankly, I actually think it's a left and a right issue of how they're being mistreated. I think these communities are being used for political gain at their expense and is entirely unfair. For example, in the state of Utah, I remember there was a bill to get rid of transgender, make it so that there was a ban on transgender women playing in sports for high schools. And they couldn't find, I think they found one person, and for a while they couldn't even find one child that's a minor because it's in high school that was playing sports. And I sat back and I thought about it.
In search of a
problem. And I was like, this, in my opinion, actually on both sides, is simply harming this community. The right is just trying to find an opportunity to trigger the left. And the left is trying to find an opportunity to perform. Mm-hmm. And what they're doing is amplifying this to be one of the biggest issues. When there's one person they could find, and all that's doing is legislating against one individual and sending a signal to an entire community. And that one individual happens to be a minor. That's bullying.
Absolutely.
That's my high-level opinion of this entire situation. And I just wish that we focus on things that actually matter, like water crisis that we have right now.
Yeah, you think with the arsenic in the air?
Like, we have a 45-day session, my friends, and that doesn't even include that includes the weekends and the holidays, like 30-something working days. Let's do things that impact the everyday working person's life.
No, I'm with you. Absolutely. All right, I got one last question.
Let's do it.
Are you ready?
Yes.
This is a hard one. What is something that progressives get wrong? Where do you think, even this can even be, you know, self-reflective, you know, do we need to be more honest, strategic, self-critical? What do you got? What are we doing? What are we doing wrong that if you were back in D.C., you know, you'd help work on?
I have an answer. I think progressives are sometimes so committed to their integrity and the ideals, which are facts, and they should, and they're going to fight for the right things. For example, let's say single-payer healthcare. We fight for single-payer healthcare. We do whatever we can. We advocate for it. We talk about all the evidence, how it makes sense. But that doesn't mean we don't work on that small Medicaid extension in this one specific aspect, or this Medicaid bill over here, or this other aspect. That's a smaller win in the meantime.
Yeah.
It's possible to be productive and progressive at the same time, we should not let our ultimate objective, kind of the let the perfect be the enemy of the good in the meantime. And I think we need to do a better job of playing both at the same time. Both at the same time. There's a difference.
Yeah.
You do two things at once, it doesn't mean you have to compromise. But we have to make people's lives better tomorrow, today.
That's a good answer. I like that. That was well put together. You should put that on a t-shirt. Okay, so we're in sort of the I'm not going to say the last few weeks, but the last several weeks before the primary, you know, we'll go ahead and wrap this up, but give me your pitch, your last speech before the votes get started kind of speech. I mean, where are you at? What haven't I covered that you'd like to talk about? Anything like that? The floor is yours. You know, give me a few minutes or not, you know, of whatever it is that you would like to push out about your message.
This is one of the most progressive districts in the entire nation, the most progressive district that is an open seat in the entire nation.
Mm-hmm.
And it requires simply a person with a track record of results and integrity to win. And we shall not jeopardize this opportunity to have an advocate for the working class simply because we decided to get behind a person that will fail a Google search test. We can instead get behind a person that's going to pass that Google search test.
Yeah.
And ultimately move our objectives forward. And that's what I really believe. This is a matter of the progressive dropping the ball rather than having to earn the election. It's in our favor. The numbers are there.
Yes.
We simply need to meet the moment. We simply need to get minority communities involved in the process and come out to vote. We simply need the West Side to be involved and engaged and excited. And what gets people excited is positivity and seeing themselves in the election and feeling like they have a fighter that they can resonate with. And I hope that I can be that person, and I believe that I am that person.
Well, outstanding. Look, I've run for office twice. I know what you're doing. I know how difficult this is. I know how much time it eats and all of that. And so, you know, I'll give you the thank you for your service. But, I mean, seriously, thank you for running. I appreciate just about anybody that puts themselves out there and invites personal scrutiny to the point, especially with a race that this high profile. I ran for doodly squat. Nobody cared. Nobody's going to run a Google search on my social medias because nobody cared. But, you know, this is a big deal and it's a big thing. And you know, thanks for doing it. I appreciate it because it sounds like if you get back there, you're going to be a representative that's going to make a guy like me feel happy.
I hope so. I'll do my best. And if I don't, you grab my ear, you drag me, my friend.
I got you.
What are you doing? You hold me accountable. I listen, I learn, we'll do better always.
You get back there, I want to see you on stage with AOC and Bernie, pal.
Hands up. We'll be together. We'll be together.
Outstanding. All right, give everybody your web address really quick, how to contact you, and anything that you need.
Absolutely. So you could find a little bit more about myself and also our platform at libanforcongress.com. That's libanforcongress.com. And also check out some of my social media pages, Liban for Congress or Liban Muhammad on TikTok. And lastly, if you'd like to reach out and get in contact with the campaign, contact with myself, reach out to us at team@libanforutah.com. team@libanforutah.com. Hope to hear from you all. And yeah, thank you for this amazing conversation, Jeff.
Hey, you bet.
I really had fun, actually. This is awesome. We got to do it again sometime.
And just because I love your website so much, if you need anything to do with this impressive young man, it's on his website. I'm looking at, I got Instagram and the TikToks and I see Twitter and YouTube. Look, you got to do the job. I get it. But anyway, thank you so much for spending some time with me today. I appreciate your time and your commitment. Good luck.
Yep. Take care. Thank you all. Bye.
If you've made it this far, you might as well join us on Patreon. Patreon.com/DFenMedia. This episode and more always available at www.theleftshow.com.